Welcome back to Overdunk, everybody, your favorite competitive Pokemon Unite podcast. This is episode, I've lost count, honestly, but it's a super important one. It's super exciting because it is our Worlds of 2024 recap episode. We are back. We took a week off to rest, relax a little bit, but we had to bring in some extra firepower to be breaking it all down. That's right. She's back. Ven, welcome back to the episode. I'm so excited to have you guested on this one to talk about Worlds. I know you watched the whole thing. So Ven, how have you been? Update the people who have been. I mean, there's a lot of people in chat super excited you're here. So let us know how you've been.
True. Hello. Yeah, I've been doing pretty well. Spent the last 8 months kind of mostly focusing on myself. Literally watched zero competitive Unite through the whole year.
Good.
Doing great in my games QA career, though. Can't tell you what game I'm working on, unfortunately, but it's a cool one. But other than that, you know, I was excited to come back. I really enjoyed Worlds. It was a great experience. I think it was some of the best competitive Unite that's ever been played. Definitely set a new bar that I hope continues into the future. And also set some very interesting lows that I would love to talk about. So
it was quite a wide array. I mean, there's a lot to talk about. We had a whole world championship and we've taken 2 weeks and there's already more news on top of it. So before I introduce my other co-hosts, of course, just want to give everybody, actually, we'll do the intros first. Bridget, you were back as well. You were doing a co-stream of the entire thing. I know because my wife was watching your stream the entire time and saying she was absolutely loving it. So how was the experience of co-streaming the world championships?
It was so much fun. It was kind of a last minute decision. I had a family thing that got canceled, so I was like, you know what, let's just see how this goes. And it was great. I ended up streaming all of it unexpectedly, but it was just really fun to get to talk about the games as they're happening with everyone in chat and seeing the chat of the main broadcast, but not have to just like be sitting there in a silo watching it. So yeah. I had a great time. You guys did an amazing job. So
thank you.
Putting on a good show for us.
Oh, of course. I'm excited. And I hope those continue. I think Bridget co-streams are pretty pog, but Duke's next. You were there alongside me there in Honolulu. I had an amazing time. I assume the experience was the same for you. So how was your experience in Hawaii?
It was terrific. It can't be understated. I think, Ven nailed it when they said it was the best, set of competition we've seen in Unite, period. I don't think there's much of an argument against that, but yep. Man, it was awesome. And then getting to spend a couple days in Hawaii afterwards, not so bad either.
Yeah, you were on island time for a few days. That's awesome. Do you have any fun stories that you and your family got to experience while in Hawaii? Anything cool?
So on a Monday, we went to a luau, and it was the Tau Luau is what it was called, but it was like a warrior luau where they're going through like all the Polynesian regions and doing dances and things like that. And they had, you know, like actual coconut tree climbers that would climb up all the way up to the top, which was insane. So that whole experience was awesome. The food was amazing. Olive had a great time. We had a great time. But like randomly leaving, I just like bump into a guy. We look at each other and I just keep walking. I was like, that was Bert Kreischer. That's exactly who that was.
Okay, sick.
And I didn't like go back and ask for a picture or anything like that. But it was funny because I just threw it on Twitter. I was like, just bumped into Bert Kreischer in Hawaii going to a luau. That's a story now. And Alex Dow, who Zoinks you know, but is a UK TCG player, also a caster, goes, huh, I'm at the luau with Bert Kreischer. So I didn't see Alex Dow, who was on the opposite side of the island, going to this luau as well. But he ended up taking a picture with Bert and sending it over to me to like confirm my suspicions. So I wasn't crazy. Bert Kreischer was at the luau that I was just at. So anyways, that would be the one, I'll say, off broadcast story that I will share.
Cool. I'm glad it was a positive one. If anyone wants to be updated on Spraggle's experience, there is a banger, banger 30-minute video on his Twitter breaking down and one of the most insane travel stories I've ever heard in my entire life. So if you're interested on Spraggle, we can laugh about it now kind of way. Yeah. Honestly, the video they put together, very, very good. So go check that out on Spraggle's Twitter. My experience in Hawaii was pretty awesome. awesome. I unfortunately didn't get to stay very long either way. Like, I got there right before the event and I left basically right after the event. Just with work and stuff, couldn't take too much time off, but I had an absolute blast. I agree with the consensus here. I think this is one of the highest heights of competitive Unite that we've ever seen, specifically in just gameplay that we were seeing. So that was awesome. And then of course just the event was so unbelievably fun. I obviously there's like pros, cons, and all that stuff. We'll get breaking down all of it, but overall I think just a really fantastic experience. So let's start talking about some of the things that went down at the World Championships. Let's just start with just broad strokes. What was everybody's like favorite part of the weekend? Was it the like the grand finals, a specific team, any specific match, anything like that that really jumps to mind as like, this was my favorite part of the entire weekend? Deuce Next, do you have anything off the top of your head?
I think the finals was great. It was a phenomenal exclamation point on another, just what was clearly the best team in the tournament, showing it and taking it down in just an absolutely vicious fashion. And we're now 3-for-3 in World Championships, where the champion wins 3-0 in the finals, and it's like an absolute no-doubter. So, you know what? If that's what we're going to be doing, then Fennel was certainly the team to do it this year, and they looked great.
Yeah. Yeah, they looked awesome. It has gone past just like a funny, this always happens. Like, now it's just culture. Like, now it's baked in. I don't think we can have a World Championships go down the road. Yeah, it has to be. Whatever format, I just think the loser will not win a single map. I really do. I firmly believe that in my heart of hearts. And if it looks like that won't happen, I will sabotage the stage. Ven, how about you? This was your reintroduction to competitive Pokemon Unite, watching this World Championship. So, Ven, how about you? Anything out that throughout the weekend you would call out as like your favorite thing to watch, to experience?
I think my favorite one was specifically Talon Fennel.
Yeah, that was.
I think that was the best set of the entire weekend. That was a really, really awesome set to watch. The adaptations in draft and in game. I think it was just overall like the best series played. Otherwise, I really, really loved I don't remember what it was. Another Fennel series, though. I really, really loved the Serena. I thought it was a really excellent pick that they had in their back pockets, and I'm surprised more people didn't have it.
Yeah, you were messaging me, and I think Deuce Nice as well, a little bit before the event, and you're like, Serena kind of cooks in this metagame, which I don't think you were wrong about. Honestly, anything melee really seemed like it was crushing all weekend long. How about you, Bridget? Anything during the co-stream that you wanted to think about? I know you had a lot of fun like interacting with a few of the social aspects too, or was as a match going to be your call out as well?
I did really like playing Bingo. That was pretty fun. The official Twitter just put out like a cute little bingo card, and I was very into it. aggressively into it. Like, it was like, as I'm watching, like, almost every team I was as soon as I started cheering for a team, they would lose. So it was very I was kind of cursing everyone, so that might have been my bad. And I'm like, wow, I'm like so sad, but at least I'm getting Bingo. So that kind of kept me going.
Were you the one who started the like comb phase as select, like as checked off Bingo boxes?
Yeah, that was my like. Okay. I used like a comb phase.
That's awesome, because I saw like the official Twitter doing it too, and I was like, oh, sick! Like, so Bridget, well done.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I don't want to take the option away from you. Is there a specific match throughout the weekend that you thought was your favorite?
Honestly, I really liked watching Zora and Onyx runs on day two, because in retrospect, I should have expected maybe like I underestimated them, because they were the last two teams picked when all the teams got to pick their matchups for day two. They were quite literally both the last ones, which I thought was interesting. But they both had such hard matchups round one. I was like, there's no way. Like, Sar and MYS are going down. And as I said, I was interact like all day about everything. So it was really fun to, just see them kind of shine. It was really great.
That's awesome. That's really awesome. Yeah, I think it was Onikruz. I don't remember. It was a backstage moment I remember clearly where I was sitting there as Talon was preparing for their stage match, and it was their manager I was sitting beside while we were watching the previous game. And I think it was Onikruz. We're walking off stage, had just come off a win, and one of their players walks up to the manager of Talon and goes, "Please beat Fennel." And then walked off stage, and I was like, everybody is begging someone to take down this team.
Onik looked good into them. It was fun.
Yeah, that was a good matchup too. We had so many good matches. That might be my favorite match of the day. I think Fennel versus Ryze was a really solid one as well. I mean, Eeyore might still be in this chat, but they were a player that I had specifically called out as a player to watch, and they were having one of the best games I've ever seen them play. So I was pretty pumped about that. I do know this, but I think it's time we talk about our new world champions, Fennel from Japan. I think we should just talk about the general storylines going around this team before they actually entered the event. It was a team that kind of everybody who was in the know knew about. Right, you see that Tun and he and Lucapo formed a team, and everyone's heads immediately turned. Like, oh, this team's going to be something big. But they didn't qualify and compete in the ACL. I forget what happened in that situation. I think it might have been a player joined later or something like that. And then they also were not one of the two teams invited to the AOS Cup. So we didn't have any international exposure to this team leading up to the World Championships. But the one time we did watch them play was when they absolutely crushed the rest of the competition in Japan. So everyone was like, I mean, I put them number two on the whiteboard. Like, everyone was like, this team can win the whole thing. They are going to be one of our tournament favorites. And lo and behold, they dropped a single map all weekend long, which was in their semifinal. An unbelievable dominant run, joining the likes of the other dominant runs we've seen at the World Championships. Fennel's crazy. We all got to see it happen time and time again, but I want to ask each of you, what do you think is kind of what makes them tick? What's the secret that made Fennel so unbelievably strong via this tournament weekend? Ven, I know you kind of had a few thoughts and analysis prepared around this, so I'm going to throw it to you first. What do you think makes Fennel so good? Why are they now the second, I guess, technically, world champs we've seen?
So I think the number, like, the biggest thing with Fennel is they approach the game in a way that, like, is very distinctly, like, separate from the way the rest of the world approaches the game. Mm-hmm. Maybe there was some parity within Japan. I don't remember exactly how the rest of the Japanese teams did.
Yeah.
But they basically look at the game as a whole and not like, okay, let's put it this way. Most teams, when they're drafting, they, like, think of the way they could, like, handle a specific Pokemon or, like, do a laning phase, that kind of thing.
Right. Laning Fennel phase very clearly, is good in this team fight. Very minute. I know what you mean.
Yeah, Fennel very clearly had a holistic view of the whole of the game while doing their drafting. They had very clear game plans at every single phase of the game. Mm-hmm. They always found distinct ways to force the opponent to play their game, and it was a game they never lost.
Yeah.
The only time that someone even looked like they were pushing them was Talon target banning them to make it so they couldn't, like, specifically play the way they wanted to play. And that was a very unique, that was a very, very good strategy on Talon's part. I think that if a team that was slightly more mechanically proficient than Talon had gotten that game plan, they probably could have pushed Fennel even harder. It would have been very interesting to see in that case.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the world we got.
Yeah, that's true.
So Fennel's just swept all the way to finals. And I think it's worth noting that, like, a lot of the things many analysts in North America flamed Japan for the last couple of years, rightfully so, what added up to, like, the way they are now, right? Like, they've played very experimentally as a region for, like, years.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of, like, the end result of that.
Yeah, we're starting to see Japan final form. A little bit, that is terrifying. Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that is a fair criticism. I mean, last year they did incredibly well too, right? Two Japanese teams mm-hmm. within top four of last year with was it Oisumi Makro in third and MJK in fourth? Like, very strong performance in year two. But
let's be real, there was a very real shot they won last year too if it wasn't for the whole sub situation.
That is true. Real. That is true. Not what we saw, but yeah, that is true.
Yes.
Fed, let us hold on to this. you're 100% correct. But okay, thank you for that analysis. Bridget, how about you? When you're watching Fennel, what does it really look like that makes them that championship team, that championship material?
Well, it didn't even seem like they got... Every Fennel game I saw just looked like a stomping until they were in, like, the quarterfinals, which is when they played
Rise,
Talon.
Right.
Talon was the quarterfinals.
That's right. That's right.
And then Onik was their semifinal game. Mm-hmm. But so I was like, okay, they're playing against really good teams, just making them look like they're nothing, which mm-hmm. is horrifying. But what I thought was really interesting, and what I'm sure a lot of people noticed, was their attacker player was just perma EXP share until one game in the finals.
Yeah.
Taun finally was like, all right. Fine. In my headcanon, Taun was egoing them onto EXP share. But I just really think, like, the characters they were playing, like, obviously it was predominantly Mew, who's, like, so good early game that it's, like, you kind of don't even, like, need it to scale as hard as, like, a lot of the tanks they were playing that could be, like, more of the hyper carries. But even when they were playing, like, Pikachu and Espeon, it was, like, perma EXP share.
Yeah.
Which no one else was doing at all.
No.
Which I don't, like, it just goes back to what Ven was saying. They were just, like, playing their own game, truly. Like, 100%. It was really unique compared to what everyone else was doing. Obviously, they had, like, meta picks, but... Mm-hmm. Still made it their own. It was cool to see.
Mm. It's hard to push that in drafts, right? It's hard to change, do enough changes in drafts to make that team feel uncomfortable and still feel comfortable in the game plan that you're going to employ in draft because you're so used to playing into other things, which is really challenging and obviously a great asset that Fennel had. How about you, Deucenax? You get to cast them winning a whole lot. So, yeah, what are your opinions on Fennel?
Yeah, obviously they're insane. I was pretty funny. After the... semifinals one, which Spraggles and I cast, and we were on break before grand finals.
Yeah.
I was in the crowd, and I caught Asinable, and Asinable was like, holy shit, brother. And I started talking to him, and the last thing he says to me, which I thought was a great thing, is as I was walking away, he goes, hey, Snacks. I was like, yeah, Asinable, what's up? And he goes, don't forget that Team YouTube 6 months ago was getting flamed for running all of the same stuff Fennel's doing. And then I was like, Yeah, because we're good at it. No, right, but like it doesn't matter. Because they gave up on it. And well, there's tons of stuff. I don't know what happened. I don't know how the conversations went, right? It doesn't matter. But it is a worth note that like Team YouTube uniquely in our ecosystem of North America was the team that was oftentimes just doing stuff like that for the sake of pushing the boundaries in different ways. So I thought that was just like a very interesting, like quick hit insight as I was walking away from, you know, another top NA team that was like, you know, maybe we need to pay a little bit more respect to those types of things and truly make sure we're fleshing those out. Mashio, again, they're Mew about 50% of the time is on EXP share, like Bridget said, which was nasty, right? It was just, how did the rest of the comp go? Okay, I'll be EXP share this game because that's going to help us out. It, you know, usually it was like when Taun was going on Charizard or whatever, right? They just switch into that flex support type Mew, which is really cool. And ultimately, to not belabor a point anywhere, they just knew more information about everybody else or at least was more ready to adapt preemptively to teams, right? They would kind of usher them into the corner that they thought the team wanted to play, and they already had a strategy on how to kind of outflank that. And we only saw, for example, the Sableye once, but it's a great, great example. If the West was paying attention to the East in the middle of the season, they would know exactly what it means when Sableye gets picked by a Japanese team.
Yeah,
it's an engagement off the back of two speedsters or a really aggressive all-rounder speedster core, and they just pick off one by one using the Sableye to give all the vision. And that's exactly what they did. And, you know, I know we don't have perfect information, but that's a prime example to me at how the East kept track of everything that happened throughout the season. The West tried to just, what was the latest thing? What, how are they going to approach in this big event? Whereas they kind of had the whole color palette to paint with. And they literally executed something that was so popular in Japan that they're banning Sableye for it. So
Yeah, there were a specific couple teams that were getting the perm of Sableye ban every single game.
So I think we just need to expand our horizons as we get further into our discussions about the rest of the teams. But of course, Fennel was head and shoulders above the rest, and it showed, and they deservingly won because they're definitely the best team in the event.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about their strategy and their game plan as a point of success. I just want to mention, because I don't think we talked about too much, just their mechanical skill. People have been telling me all year long, and I think it took me too long to listen, but P is, I think, the best player to ever touch this game. He is
insane.
Unreal. Cracked on the sticks, except that he is a Switch player too, so I can say that. He's unbelievably good.
Isn't P like Joy-Cons attached to the Switch?
No. That's Noda. That's the Zeta Division support player. That's the Zeta Division support player. We will not enable Joy-Cons attached to Switch.
Thank God.
No. He is pro controller, slouched gamer mode, rocking everybody's world. So that is the game pattern he goes into
The absolute war crime of them getting away with like Serena Mew bot into Cram Slowbro and walking out of that lane level 7?
I don't know. I mean, what are you securing with? How are you still winning? It's so cool. I mean, so cool. I love watching that player play. They're so phenomenal. Grand Finals was just a literal walking highlight reel of them and Tone all over that match. And I do think they're some of the most mechanically talented players we had. And when those two things line up, like great game plans, a good meta understanding, and then, of course, the ability to play everything that they're talking about and trying to put into practice is amazing. So that's why we got our new world champions, Fennel. So congratulations to them, of course. An amazing tournament run. They were so fun to watch. And I think it's very likely, but I am hoping they stick together next year, or at least the majority of that roster, because I would love to see the run back of that team. And I think it is quite likely, but we'll see. Let's get into some other topics though, about like kind of a bigger topic. And oh my gosh, thank you so much for the raid, Curious. A former world champion. I guess that's the first time we have to say that. Dang. Crazy.
Wow.
Crazy. Yeah. But hey, welcome back, Curious. We are going to be talking next about just some of the overall arcing storylines that happened at this Worlds. Obviously one that was talked about a lot on Twitter. Was the West not having the best showing in this event, which is kind of funny that I was looking at it, because it's actually quite similar to last year's LG not included, just because it was very top heavy for Asia in the final bracket. But just for some metrics, I mean, top 8 was 6 out of 8 teams were from Asia, where 2 were from the West. I think Nouns and Fusion rounding out that squad. Top 16 I think was pretty close to even, with a slight edge to Asia, if I remember correctly, because we threw out Orange Juicers and Nemesis into that crew as well, so I think it gets somewhat close. It's still more dominated by Asia, and then of course we have an Asian champion, with only one Western team making it to top 4 in Fusion. So, definitely a stronger performance for Asia. Deucex, you kind of already mentioned your thoughts on it, was just more of a global awareness of what people were playing, and how they wanted to perform. Ven, how about you? What are you thinking? Why were the... It's not even really a flip-flop, but I guess just a general trend that we have seen from year 1 to year 2 to year 3. It's the general rise of Asia.
I think it's partially the thing I mentioned. Asia is a lot less afraid of experimentation.
Mm-hmm.
And when they do experiment, to go back to the Team YouTube example, Team YouTube, I don't think, at least when they were doing it in previous years, I didn't watch this year, obviously, so I can't speak to it. But based on some of the things Twitch chat was saying, it didn't seem like they fully understand the purpose behind that experimentation.
Okay.
It comes down to like competitive culture and like playing to understand and playing to improve versus playing to get through your scrim block, right? I think that's a big piece of it. I think the general like development of play styles over time in Korea and Japan is something you see very clearly versus like This is going to sound like a distinction without difference, but like it feels like a lot of North America isn't a development of play styles, it's a development of game plans.
And yeah, development I think of that's game fair. Plans
is very, very predictable. And it leaves you open and it like stifles your growth otherwise. Hmm. It also makes it a lot more difficult for you to adapt to new meta picks. A lot of North American players don't tend to practice things they don't think are very good. I can't speak to Europe, but at least from my experience in NA. There's just like so many factors that like, and also like, let's not forget, like a good chunk of the support staff, like myself included, just did not come back this year. Mm-hmm. Wonder why that happened. There's all sorts of things that lead into it, and I don't think you can blame any individual piece on any one of them.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. Yeah, Bridget, how about you? How are you feeling about, or not how are you feeling, but yeah, why are you thinking that the Asian teams are having such a big burst of success?
I feel like my thoughts are definitely a continuation of Ben's, but she said it a lot better than I probably ever could. But to me, even just watching primarily like day two, it just seemed like a lot of like the APAC or Eastern teams like had a much more like solved meta than what the West seemed to bring. Like I feel like this goes off of them just being like more curious and maybe understanding like the whys behind certain picks, other than it's just like it's meta and good, which I know it's definitely not that simple, but it can be something I feel like easy to like mindlessly rely on as opposed to like being innovative, especially like when you're in the moment in like a high pressure situation, like feeling comfortable like doing something maybe that you didn't exactly plan on or didn't plan as much, but the situation calls for it. I don't know. It just felt like they had a lot more, I don't know. They went further down like the web of what the things they could pick or what they wanted to do than what the Western team seemed to bring.
Yeah. Okay. Fair. Fair. How about you, Deucex? Any more thoughts on this topic?
Yeah, I think that there's two axes on which they found success that the West didn't. The first being exactly what Ven and Bridget mentioned. I think the other one that hasn't been mentioned yet is the teams that didn't get down into the well of solving the puzzles and everything like that with, you know, if this, then that type reactionary drafts or strategies or whatever, were teams that just genuinely knew who was on their team, what they liked to do, what they were good at, and then played to it. I mean, Kakalak is a perfect example. They're like, hey, if Dragonite's there, it's first pick, because that's how we're going to win the game. If it's not there, we're taking Urshifu. First pick, because that's how we're going to win the game. Yeah. And in their top eight games that we watched, the first one was, like, obviously ridiculous, right, that they won. But the second game, because they had Dragonite, right? They first picked, it wasn't banned. They thought that Urshifu was going to be the problem and that's how they're going to stop Kakalak. Wasn't true. It was just a bait and switch. So they actually got the Dragonite they wanted. And in the Dragonite game, they had, I think, 4 knockouts total on the entire game, but so much map control that the other team couldn't actually take advantage of these radical team fights that they were taking and knockouts that they were getting, which allowed them to execute their exact strategy and why they have Dragonite, which is to take Rey with a Hyper Beam and win themselves a game, right? It was so very clear what they were trying to do. And up until that point, it was mitigating the score, right, to make sure that they were within striking distance at Rey, and then taking Rey. If we do that, we'll win the game. Fine. Give ourselves the tools that we need to do that. But they didn't shy away from who they were, right? They just instead did the exact opposite. They just leaned into it. Yeah. They're like, this is our A strategy. This is our B strategy. And if we get neither, well, we're taking a loss. And hopefully we can break the draft next time. And they did great. Mm-hmm. When I say they did great, they did great for the world stage. On stage, they delivered a result that I'm sure they wish could have gone a little further, but given what I just described to you, you wouldn't think would be the recipe for success on the world stage, right? Fair enough. So if you don't know, and all of that goes back to understanding your team. And I think the West doesn't understand their teams, to be quite honest. I think they don't understand their pieces. I think they have a difficulty adjusting, and they say this player is great, but why isn't it working in this, you know, the microcosm of our little squad? So I've got a couple examples off the top of my head, and I think we can start with LG, right? We look at Overlord. Overlord is obviously a phenomenal player. And Zoinks, you can attest to this. On Thursday when we were doing our content piece, and they said, who's the best player to ever touch the game? What did you remember who I said to you before the fake interview?
No.
I said Elo. I said, I think Elo is the best player that has ever played.
I remember.
I said, I think Elo is actually the best player to ever played. I mean, silently, a phenomenal member of that LG squad. And is JL a one-for-one replacement for Elo? No, it's not a skill question. It's just they're different players, right? But then we saw them put JL on Comfy when JL's an insane Blissey player. Okay, so why, in the one game we saw it kind of crack off with that zero or strategy, well, JL was back on Blissey. So it's like, well, why isn't he doing that? And then you're starting to think, well, JL's also one of the best Sableyes on the planet. And, like, Japan clearly always keeps a Sableye on hand ready to go. But why didn't they ever pivot into that strategy and put the trust into what the best supporter in NA is, right? That's why they picked him up on the team. Why don't they have any trust in him to run that strategy? And then you can go down the list with all of their players. You can do that. But they just ran the same type of strategy back that they did the years prior. The other prime example is why, like, at some point, like, I just want to see Gatlu on Greedon and nothing else. Because if they're going to be, like, if they're going to be doing ridiculous engagements and setting the team up to have these off-kilter fights at red, man, give them the tools to get in and out and actually do some damage and have fun. Like, let the kid have some fun on the map, right? And I don't know what the decisions are, but at some point you have to understand, okay, Gatlu plays this way, and yes, 10% of the time they have the sickest engagement we've ever seen that we saw in, you know, in game 3 where they had that big-time win where he was the one leading the engagement on the backside where he was kind of in the middle of nowhere, and it's like, oh, is he going to get caught? But no, it totally worked out, and it was super sick,
yeah.
Right? But, like, if that's how he plays, give him a character that can do that successfully 90% of the time instead of 10, and then just play like that, and that's totally cool. Like, I can't even imagine how much legwork Gatlu would have been able to put in on Greedon instead of a 22k Charizard game, you know? Like, I'm just being
out.
But it's what it is. And I'm sure after the game Gatlu would have been like, shit, I really wish I would have played Greedon instead, and everybody was probably like, man, we probably should have gone with Greedon, hey, like. But they know that about Gatlu. But, like, why aren't they putting the faith in these best players that they have to, like, lean into strategies that they're good in? Like, you can't just always go, okay, it's Overlord, then it's, you know, then it's Otter, and then, okay, if Joey's cracking off on Tree, blah, like it can't be a pyramid, right? It just can't anymore. It doesn't work like that. And if it is a pyramid, you better know every single block in that works to build a good pyramid. Mm-hmm. So I think all that, again, goes down to, do you know the players on your team? Do you know what they're good at? And do you trust them enough to lean into them when it's their time to step up? And the East certainly does that. I don't know if the West has figured it out.
To play to your strengths, right? Yeah, I can see that point be pretty big. I actually think it is worth, we've kind of dabbled into it a little bit, but I think it is worth talking about the overall metagame that happened at Worlds, right? Mm-hmm. Because I think this was one of the hardest ones to predict over all of the Worlds metas that we've had. I also think this was the most open meta that we have ever had at Worlds. The last couple of years were dominated by specific pairs, right? Year one, it was like Blissey Zarina, kind of Dragonite, if you really want to throw that into the mix. If you want to make it a trio, I suppose. The year after, it was like Zacian, Lapras, Comfey. Am I getting this right, Ben? Does that do those three kind of feel? Those feel like the dominating trios. But this year, it felt a lot more open. I mean,
it was sick.
Most of the Western teams, and I think a lot of the Asian teams too. APAC was kind of wise to this already, but a lot of teams were like, Charizard, we are banning that every time, and it had like almost like just over 40% win rate. I think definitely was struggling out there in tournament play.
It was so bait.
Yeah, I've. I've been saying the Charizard, and I think we all kind of discovered that as we were watching. I will say, my Mamoswine prediction, pretty excited about it for a lot of reasons. One, they did win Worlds. Two, I was looking at the poker stats. Sorry, I can't bring them up on screen because I goofed the setup before we went live, but Bridget just nods. She's like, absolutely, you did. So, Mamoswine, the only Pokemon with a above 50% win rate and above 50% win and pick rate. So, the only Pokemon that met those metrics both at over half the time, which I think is pretty sick. So, shout out really Mamoswine for absolutely crushing it. Helps that Ton was playing that Pokemon a ton. Dang it. Helps that Ton was playing that Pokemon.
Shout out to Fusion for picking, like, two tanks, and one of them was Mamoswine. It was picked, like, 95% of the time.
Yeah, yeah, Fusion.
they had a very consistent draft strategy.
True. So good. Locked in. Hey, when they're the only team that'll give me double speedster to cast, I will accept it with open arms. Okay? Speaking of playing to your strengths, LATAM lives and breathes that stuff. But, yeah, I think that was a pretty exciting thing. Any meta, I mean, we talked so much about Fennel's metagame strategy and stuff. So we should probably have Fennel withstanding any other interesting meta developments that we saw play out, specifically in day two, you know, the teams that got a bit
of
momentum.
Is it time for the Korea talk?
Yeah, okay. You can lead us with the Korea talk. Somehow it's not me championing Zora Tigers Gaming with my flag held high. But okay, Ven, go ahead. Talk to us about Korea.
The thing that Korea, like, in the first couple of years, the thing that Korea was always best at, and they had mixed results the first couple of years.
Yeah, yeah. Usually, like, middle really of the pack to bottom. It's, like, somewhere in there.
Yeah. They were really, really good at playing the game in extremely disruptive ways. You saw this the most clearly when you were getting, like, Korea versus Korea matchups, and you were, like, getting that, like, weird, like, level 1 Talonflame invade, and you were just like, what the hell is going on? I'm so confused.
Uh-huh.
I remember that game from year one.
Yeah. I remember. Okay.
It was very similar way to the way they played versus other regions, too. And I think Zora Tigers took that style, what I would call, like, a greeted style, because that was the core of that idea.
Yeah,
and it's the core of how Greedent plays. Disclaimer, Gold came up with that idea first, not me, but I am perfecting it.
okay. Shout out.
Hello.
They decided, okay, here's what we're going to do. We are going to not play the video game for 7 straight minutes.
Yeah.
We're just going to load into a match, and we are going to stall. We're going to pick a Magikarp and we're going to do nothing.
Nodders.
And then all of a sudden, the moment they think they have the download, they just turn it on.
Yeah.
The moment they think they understand your macro, they play in a way that is designed to disrupt your game plan.
Mm-hmm.
And they just keep at it and they never stop. And the only team they couldn't beat like that was a team who they could not read.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, tough to get a good read on Fennel at any moment of the game, but you're right. I mean, Zora brought us some crazy stuff. You are correct. They had it unbelievably slow early games, which is uncharacteristic of winning teams in this year's Worlds, right? Like, if we look back at so many of these teams, early game was so important, like more important than it's ever been in any World Championship game. Keeping score tempo, especially against the Japanese teams, looking at Zeta and Fennel primarily, was paramount to having any kind of success there. So that makes sense. But yeah, Korea playing outside of that bubble in total, which is awesome. I mean, hey.
And that, I think, leans well into Dupes Max's whole rant there. They had a, like, strategy they developed, a strategy that, like, if any North American team attempted it, they would, like, get bullied on whatever the pro server is now for, like, 2 straight months. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like, they like, it just, it wouldn't work out. And they would probably lean out of it before, like, they really fully developed it.
That's fair. That's fair. Yeah, Zen Headbutt Metagross, right? We're seeing that was Zora, right? I think I'm mm-hmm. correct.
I believe so. Yeah.
Yo, so yeah, cool. Was it Sync One?
Yeah, no, that's Talon. Sync One's Talon. Talon. I'm thinking of. I think it's Talon that I'm thinking of with the Metagross.
Maybe, okay. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. Sync One's Zen Headbutt Metagross was disgusting.
I can't believe it was working. I was just like,
it was working.
But it was working. Yeah, working's underselling. You were absolutely correct. They were crushing. Yeah, it was awesome. Okay. But I guess the question to you, Bridget, the same one. The metagame, I mean, I don't expect you to have a developed point of Korea is Greedent, but were there any other interesting metagame developments throughout the weekend that you found particularly cool or fun to watch or anything in between?
I'll stall for a second to get Bridget. I just realized Korea is Greedent in this game. Seijin Park's whole thing is Pachirisu. Maybe Korea is just squirrels.
They're squirrels!
I mean, Seijin Park one-tricked Greedent, Worlds Year One.
Oh, that like, is true.
He did!
That is actually true.
They didn't win much, but he did one-trick Greedent Year One.
Hey, you got the Worlds.
Hey, that is correct. That is correct. Can't take that away from him. All right.
Exactly.
All right, Bridget, same question to you about meta.
Okay, my developed thought is nouns is like comfy. No, I don't know.
Okay. No. Yeah, now everyone pick a Pokemon for a team. I like this.
If you had to compare Pokemon to a team. Yeah, okay. So ultimately, I loved how diverse it was.
Yeah.
Pikachu, I was very shocked that like we were seeing it at all, much less seeing it like
kind of correct.
Almost like popped off and like counterpicked like in the semifinals even like I'm not sure like in my notes like if people were even like I feel like we didn't see it until like quarter semifinals at least on stream. Mm-hmm. I guess I don't know everything that was happening in groups necessarily, but I was like yeah then I were all up in that Wikipedia page during the games, but yeah, I was really surprised by that one. And Espeon. Actually, I was surprised at what mages kind of popped. Yeah. I wouldn't have expected Espeon to be as prominent and like do as well as it seemed to do. Mm-hmm. Obviously, like these were things Fennel definitely leaned into and also probably why they shine, but it's almost like they saw their enemies doing it, and when they like banned away the Mew or picked away the Mew, they were like, okay, we'll just snag this one. I thought that was really exciting to me.
That is frustrating. It's interesting too, because that was the big difference to me in the top two Japanese teams, right? Where Fennel would play very crowd control focused attackers. Like they would play into the mages. They would Pikachu or Espeon or even Mew. We saw Zeta Division going with snipers every single time. Like if we can get ROM on a Inteleon, we're winning. Like we are going all in on that long range damage. So it was pretty cool to see the like total flip flop of the strategy between the two teams. Obviously Zeta played way more Leafeon than Fennel did. However, Fennel did bring it out every now and then, but Zeta definitely leaning into I want to say almost a more Western take, but it's not really true because they had Blastoise Rapidspin the whole time, which was interesting. I mean, certainly they were winning. They got to top eight, I believe Zeta Division made it to, right? Yeah, they got to top eight, so still pretty sick performance up there with a lot of great teams. So still very cool. Metagame development for me, I mean, I've already mentioned it. I was so excited to see so much Mamoswine. I think Icefang Mamos finally found its time. It's great into this entire melee-focused metagame. You don't need Mamo to make the Icefang combo work. I've talked about this a lot of like why I think you always wanted 9 on Mamo before was because you were playing the high horsepower with the Icicle Crash build, and you kind of want the Unite move as the third step of that combo. You land the Ice, you land the high horsepower, and then you want it to lead into the Unite, and that's kind of what Mamo does best with that build, is you create a giant hallway for your team to run down, and then you're able to create crowd control. With Icefang, you don't care about your Unite move. Like all you're doing is camping in bushes with Earthquake, waiting for someone to walk by, and then just absolutely ruining their day. You don't need your Unite move as this piece, right? So instead of being a whole team-wide focus crowd controller, you're just looking to take down one target. And for that, you don't need that level 9 piece. So it's pretty nice. I like that a lot. Will I see it continue to have success in competitive Pokemon Unite? I don't know. This feels like I found the... The one tournament will it really will have succeeded, but I don't know. Who knows how long this game will be competing.
In the long term, Mamoswine will prove to be like an effective, like I don't want to say like island top laner, but like a tank top laner that like
Gatlu popped off with it top lane.
Like 50-50. Like if you want to, it's not bad to invest resources, but also like it's fine on its own. I don't think it'll ever be remotely viable in the tank role, though. I'm not gonna lie. I think it's
seen it today. Yeah, I could get on board with that. But
read the Pikachu points. 5 teams picked Pikachu across 13 games.
Wait.
On day two?
On day one and day two.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
There was a lot of Pikachu, a lot more than you probably think.
Yeah, definitely. Off-screen I know. I'm trying to think back to broadcast games on day one, but it feels like
Fennel,
a lifetime ago.
Eason, Zora, and Dream, whatever.
Dream Max.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. Very cool. All right. Well, sick. That brings us to the end of our metagame talk. Sorry, y'all. This is going to be like one of our longest episodes. Said every episode. Okay. Yeah, I think that's basically the... As much as I think we're going to get out of the actual competition at Worlds, I think that sums it up pretty nicely. If any of us have any more thoughts to throw in, we can get those in a bit. But Doobsnacks, I know you had some cool numbers to talk about that you wanted to bring.
Yeah, let me pull them up so I don't get them wrong. The numbers guy, formerly Zoinks, but now he's the cool guy. So I get to be the numbers.
God, that bit was so fun.
Good bit. Good bit.
High quality bit for certain.
Really enjoyed that.
While you're pulling those up, Doobsnacks, quick story of how it happened. Wonder Chef and I were up pretty late the night before, like on Thursday night. We just went down to like the hotel store, like a little bodega down there to go grab like some energy drinks. And I think I needed to pick up like toothpaste because I always forget it. And so we grabbed that. I was about to go up and we both looked at the sunglasses rack. Looked at each other, and then the next day we were wearing sunglasses on broadcast, and that's how the story really is. I thought it was fun. Doobsnacks, you got numbers to talk about. What's going on?
It was a terrific bit.
I'm glad you liked it.
Okay, so across Twitch and YouTube, day two, we peaked at 38k concurrent viewers. Japan surprisingly hit about the same number.
Okay.
So collectively was about 70 to 75K viewers across the Japan broadcast and our broadcast watching Unite on day two, which is terrific. That's very, very exciting. The average viewership was a little bit all over the place because of obviously the grand finals bump, but it was around 7 to 10K throughout both days. The average view time is about a set. So it was about like 30 to 40 minutes.
That's not bad.
A little less than that, depending on when, we're on the front page and stuff like that. Right. So that really obviously that adds some numbers, which is terrific. But it really kind of axes the view time. So if you incorporate when we're on the front, it was just over 20 minutes there.
Cool.
How we compare to other games. We rinse TCG in every metric.
Okay. Great.
go beat us on Twitch for average viewers. But we shattered them on YouTube, which is a more organic feed, is what it's deemed, because there's no front page type boost. Obviously, they had drops going on all weekend long, stuff like that. So,
were there drops on YouTube? Question.
No.
Okay.
No drops on YouTube.
And I know the goat drops were good. People were fiending for the goat drops. Just saying.
They always
no
are.
No offense.
So, our drops need work. That is like so fair.
The goat drops
people
are
weren't coming for the drops.
The goat drops are exponentially better, right?
Yes.
So they beat us on average viewers on Twitch because of that, but we destroyed them. We did much better than them on YouTube, which is more organic, obviously, because the drops aren't activated. And VG beat everybody because they sit on the main Pokemon channel, and they get the majority of the Twitch money spent to keep them on the front page. So I think just within our own brand, I think Unite is very solidly, we can make an argument in that second spot behind video game, which for a 3-year little trajectory is great. I think it was Hexgeth that posted online that we actually are doing better than Call of Duty Mobile, which is kind of
Hexgeth's got something against COD Mobile. I don't know what it is, but every second tweet's like, yo, COD Mobile viewership sucks. But hey, I'm here for it.
I'm with it.
Yeah, I'm with it.
So that was just like the quick breakdown of the viewership numbers I was able to get. Yeah. And I think it's easy to extrapolate that That's good. we're the game itself is growing, and I know
we also beat our peak, right? So last year we were at like 50. Yeah. We were 58, I think, was our peak, and this year we were like 20,000 more than, like, somewhere in the higher 70,000.
Wow.
So, yeah. I mean, drops help a ton. We had drops this time.
We'll take those.
We didn't, but yeah, those numbers are awesome. So I'm super happy.
But again, I think something that's important to note along with the drops, right? Imagine if, one, we had good drops, but two, a lot of our viewership comes through YouTube, which the other games can't really boast. So something to keep in mind there. But all in all, I think it just shows a great upward trajectory for Unite in terms of who's watching, who's paying attention, and warranting us to get a little bit more change in terms of financial support when it comes to drops, when it comes to time spent on the front page of Twitch, because we're certainly getting a pretty big kickback to Pokemon just for being on YouTube and the numbers we bring in there. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to talk about that because I thought that was super duper exciting. Yeah. I think it's a great way to think about the game, that sometimes when we're in our insulated bubble of NA or EU, right, which is mostly what we cover and talk about here on Overdunk, that although those regions sometimes feel lackluster, right, in terms of participation or what have you, this game is very active everywhere on Earth, it seems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Besides, I think you could make a mention like OC, EU.
Two regions, you know, are hurting. Yeah.
And NA is you know, we'll say positively at a stagnant spot. Sure. But everywhere else,
plateau,
is kind of crushing. Yeah, we'll say plateau. Good job. But everywhere else is doing well, and it's slowly going up, which is great. And of course, it's absolutely rabid in the East. So I'm super excited about the game. I think it gives it just kind of that injection of life. It's kind of like the big hold your breath and see what happens type Fallout of Worlds, right? Because it's truly one of the metrics of, is this worth continuing to support, to invest in? Is it bringing eyes to our game? And it's uniquely bringing a lot of eyes from different pools of people that the other games don't touch, which is terrific. So, Eastern Unite viewership carry? No, that's not true. I literally just said there's the Japanese broadcast and ours. So, like, ours collectively sucks up all of the English-speaking countries. Japan is so rabid it matches, but that doesn't necessarily mean that Eastern Unite viewership carries. I think you can give a big tip of the cap to LATAM.
I think LATAM. Those numbers peaked when Fusion was on that screen, I feel like.
Oh my gosh, the Brazilian fans everywhere.
Brazilian fans, you got the Peruvian fans out there for Fusion, it's sick.
One of the funniest moments of the whole weekend was, like, watching, like, every single time a team, like, did something that seemed mildly disrespectful into Brazil, and then, like, they would post on Twitter, and the replies would just be, like, 15 people flaming them in Portuguese.
Right.
I love Brazil, man.
Listen, hey, but I'm glad because we'll talk about
the
that.
The actual, like, non-meme point was, I think a big reason for Unite's success is the, it has, in my opinion, even better than VG, the best viewing experience.
Yeah.
Like, by a pretty good margin. Like, no shade to TCG. I don't think there's a way to make that viewing experience, like, washable.
They did better this year. Hard. The cool layout thing was good. That definitely helped. But I'm with you. I'm with you. Continue. Yeah. So sorry.
So, like, and obviously, like, Go and VG are turn-based games. There's always going to be limitations there as well. Mm-hmm. So, but, like, huge shout out to the observers who have improved year over year. There was a lot less, like, observer lull moments this year.
Yeah.
I can only think of a couple off the top of my head, and those are always going to happen, right?
Right.
There were ones that nobody expected. Huge shout out to, obviously, all the casters. You guys have put, like, great energy forward, especially for, like, the more casual fans, which are what those streams are trying to capture, you know? Like,
yeah.
People will be like, well, why did they need to explain the toolkit of that Pokemon? Because you're not the target audience. You know what I mean?
Yes. Okay,
yeah,
thank you.
Literally.
All right. Let me speak to this for a moment. I've had a good amount of conversations with this, with viewers, with players and everything. Esports landscape has changed so much in the last 10 years or so. And one of the biggest changes has been the introduction of co-streams, right? Like, co-streams are a brand new frontier to what esports is, and that's why you start seeing official co-streams, because official co-streams mean that the companies can use those numbers and add them to their metrics. That's what having an official co-stream is. That's why you do that. But what all that allows you to do is you're just going to find the environment that you want to watch in, right? If you were a top-level competitive player, you're most likely going to be ending up in, like, Chris Hero's chat, right? Like, when they're doing that stream, or someone, because that's the kind of thing you're looking for. If you but the whole job of the main broadcast is the landing page. Like, that is the first experience that anybody is going to have with competitive Pokemon Unite. So our job is, like, kind of multifaceted. We do want to be, we want to explain the game in simpler terms than top-level players would probably prefer, so that newer players can experience it. But we also want to make sure that we are giving the game its credit in its complexity and in how it is interesting, to prove to people that it is not just a simple game, because it is not. I mean, we could say there's been metas where it's been simple, but overall, it is not a simple game. So we kind of have this double-faceted job on the main broadcast. And that's a fun spot to be. I think right now the broadcast is doing a really good job of that. So I've been happy with that. But yeah, that's Twitch numbers stuff, baby.
Twitch numbers stuff.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's what we were looking for. Let's go on to our next topic, everybody. And that is going to be the 500 point mode. Now, this was showcased on day number one. It's like the final thing on broadcast. I know Twitch chat wasn't super happy about it and blah, 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 blah. But
shut up, Twitch chat.
I know. Listen.
No, it's stupid.
We were all aligned. Like, this game needs something new. Needs something exciting.
Yeah.
And I think it was exciting. So, but Doomsex, you got to cast it. I was, I'm not going to lie, I was watching the B stage game, so maybe I'm a bit of a hypocrite right now.
Wow.
But let's talk about it. Bridget, you and I.
Trying to get a storyline straight.
I know. Bridget, you and I did an entire podcast episode with Gek about this game mode and the whole China version and everything. We saw a lot of that happen. Also, if anyone was watching my Twitter, I got to go on the It's Super Effective podcast recently, like this last week, and did a segment with Steve, who hosts that show. Who was playing in the 500 point mode on stage. So we got to talk a little bit about it. We discussed, like, his thoughts on it, what he felt, differences between the main game and this one. And then, of course, I talked a little bit about it. The announcement trailer and the graphics on screen and everything, all they have promised us is the 500 point mode. I want to make that so clear. The only thing that the game has promised us is that game mode. We don't know if we're going to get more stuff. I know there's been data mines where, like, maybe little tidbits here and there we might get. I don't know if we're going to get the double plus moves or the different held items, all the stuff we talked about in that episode. But at least we know one thing we're getting. That's a brand new mode. So, Doomsex, you got to cast it. I was watching something else. So, Bridget, let's start with you. I'm sure you saw it on your co-stream. Hopefully you didn't tune away. What did you think of the 500 point mode in practice?
We did watch it. Also was not hype at first, but sure. I was happy we got to see more Nemesis than we were going to day one, which I was already in arms about. So I was already, like, you know, I was kind of up from getting to see Nemesis game. I was surprised when it was on, but I watched all of it. I mean, they were pretty quick matches. It was very fun. Yeah. So it was like, a lot of, like, Pokemon, like, broader Pokemon content creators, I think some of them, like, play Unite, like, casually and stuff. And some, like, MOBA pros that I think Timmy invited. I think I got that from Zoinks' other podcast.
Yeah, they were all like ex-pros of other games. Like, a couple of, like, Honor of Kings players from China. I think Arena of Valor is Honor of Kings in China, I think. So but that's how it was said to me. It was another player from there. So it's a whole thing. But yes, ex-pros from other games. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, it was actually really fun to watch. It just moves so fast, this 500-point mode. It is very chaotic to, I mean, even watch. I can't imagine trying to, like, talk and cast about what is happening. But it was fun. I was really grateful we had done that episode with Gek Zoinks, for anyone interested. He is, like, Oh my gosh. I mean, he was so knowledgeable on this like months ago, like when it first, the first beta dropped.
He's a bit of a nerd.
Yeah.
Just gonna say it.
How dare you? That's so insulting. But I was, because I had so much more context, I feel like, as to what was happening. Even just with like where the objectives were spawning, like the Pokemon evolving so soon. You can like see the score. It was also very funny. I feel like you could tell. I don't remember which team he was on, but there was definitely a player who was like sweating, and you could tell. You could tell the other like pros were like kind of like okay, you know, like being like chill. There was one guy who was like not being chill.
I'm here to win. Thank you very much.
I think he was playing Absol one game. If anyone goes back and watches the show match, there's a kid being a demon. It was really funny. But it made me actually pretty excited. I watched like during the closing ceremonies, they play the trailer, like when they're doing all the Pokemon announcements, Ichihara, like they're kind of like going over all of the new stuff for all the new games, and they showed the trailer again for Unite's 500 point mode. And I went back and listened to exactly what he said, because I was like, did I mishear this? Because I interpreted like, oh, we're going to see this at Worlds to some extent next year. I think maybe like just like China will play it. But he basically said it might play a role in future competitions. And I was like, whoa, crazy that he's even saying that. Obviously, it doesn't come out until spring of next year.
Yeah.
But
yeah, that's news, though. We got like a release season. Like, we have had no idea, right? We've been in the dark. So China's supposed to launch in November, and then 500-point mode in global in spring, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm just hoping, like, we have some, like, China representation at Worlds next year. Like, even if it's, like, their own, like, I don't know. It just makes me excited because I know they've been trying to get them into this game since it came out. So it just makes me excited for them and excited for the esport in general. Yeah. Anyway.
Fair enough. No,
I mean, China's a floodgate to a lot of players and a lot of potential money. So,
yes.
Yeah,
biggest market really on Earth, and specifically in this genre, more than any other else. And I mean, Pokemon as a entity has been trying to get into China for a lot of it, right? TCG just made their debut, like I think a little over a year ago, into the China market. So they're playing with like a slightly different version of the game a few sets back. So I believe you could play the mainline games now in China. Go is still not available, but they're doing everything they can to get Pokemon there because it's extremely popular, obviously. But then, did you get the chance to actually watch the show match on Friday? And if you did, what'd you think?
I think I watched it, but I'm going to be honest, like, I'd watched so much Unite that day that I have no memory.
Just blurred. Okay, fair enough, fair enough. Well, but, then, just quick idea on it, then.
So, okay, I will try not to make this too long, but there's this, like, concept in game design called, like, a cursed problem, right?
Okay.
Where you have two different ideas that are both, like, a core to the game that, like, conflict, right? So in the case of Unite, you have the idea of, like, decisions matter versus, like, you get, like, advantage for making good decisions. Because over time, it will lead to game states where decisions no longer matter, which is why, like, especially, which is then amplified by the 10-minute time limit. It's why, like, we have to have the most powerful thing in the middle of the map.
Correct.
And over time, that eventually leads to flip metas. Like year one, let's be honest, if that meta had continued for another 2 months, it probably would have been a bunch of flipping.
Yeah.
Year three, like even year two to year three, there were more games decided by stupid flips on the broadcast this year than there were last year.
Probably.
I think so. About, like, there weren't that many, but like it was like getting to the point where it was like starting to creep into the back of your mind, like,
Shout out Cake Alok for this year. But yeah, no.
Keeping it alive.
Having that like hard line, like, no, this is how many points you need to win the game, allows them to better tune comeback mechanics, as well as, like, you know, having the extra like system for like builds and stuff. It just like adds so many different layers to the game that if it is well executed, I don't see it not being a better competitive format.
Yeah, I agree. I am like fully aligned with you there. just to reiterate what Vince saying, you were saying, just so I'm clarifying, basically, that it will be, if it is done well, designed well, it will be a better competitive format than what we have now.
Yes.
Sweet. I agree.
I apologize for double negative.
No. You're totally fine. Yeah, I just wanted to make it abundantly clear. Deuce Next, how about you? Thoughts on it? You got to cast it. We've casted it a couple of games, like, of the China mode, you and I, and then you obviously got to cast this one live with the creators versus the Timmy creators. So what were you thinking?
I think it looks incredibly fun. I think it's exciting to have something new to the game. It's definitely a nice shot in the arm. I think Worlds does kind of like the front work, right? We're starting the season earlier, which will help carry that momentum. It dropping in spring, I think, is great timing. I don't know, with how early this season is starting, that it'll find its way into the competitive realm for this season, which might be a good thing, so we can kind of massage out all these kinks, if you will, with this game mode. Yeah. Because to be quite frank, you know, Spraggles and I had the information on some of these AOS technologies, and they're berserk, right? Know, something that, you know, you all may not be tapped into is, like, the text on all of them. When you say that it leads to inevitable situations or the flip situation, what happens in these games, as it currently exists, so definitely room for improvement here, is essentially the team that starts getting ahead essentially throws the sword of Damocles over their opponent. So they don't know when they're going to lose, but they're going to lose, and it's inevitable. Because the spikes that you get at each gated point is so egregious that it becomes insurmountable in its own right. Like, where you just don't have any capacity to fight back against a character that has, if they're over 90 HP, they have 50% more damage on all their moves. Or your Unite move charges up 3 times faster. And stuff like that. Like,
oh yeah.
So it snowballs in a different way. Which, that is one thing. Something that Shinohara and I were talking about, the Japanese caster, that him and I were uniquely on the same page on when discussing with all the other casters are, it's, in its current state, it becomes a much harder ride to bring spectators along on. Which for a game that is as short-winded as ours is, that's a tough pill to swallow. And a reason that things like Honor of Kings, League of Legends, Dota and stuff that have this more paced out, kind of similar to the 500 point mode station, if you will, is because you actually get time to explain, Ven, to your point, the very cool, intricate decisions that they're making throughout the game. But right now, it is so crazy that you can't realistically cover one thing in enough time to give people insight as to why it was cool before the next 3 things have occurred. Mm-hmm. Whereas Unite right now is cadenced to the spot where you do have a few low points to address those moments, even though the game is fairly short. And the last thing is yes, the games can go longer than 10 minutes, but we saw one on stage that ended before the 8-minute Zapdos showed up. So, that means it was below 8 minutes. And that is overcooked chicken. That's tough. That is a dog water experience for everybody. So,
really? Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
I think that sometimes ending a game earlier is nice. Like, there is some UCS games that I really wish we allowed surrendering sometimes. You know, we are watching a match and it's like, oof, we have a tough 4 minutes ahead of us for this next one. Having a game end when the team just beats them, I don't know, sometimes can be nice.
Sure, but then the counterpoint is they're beating the brakes off of them and they won't end it, which is arguably infinitely worse too, right? At least you're gated by some time. So that's my concern, is these AOS technologies really need to be reined in a little bit or balanced out across the span, so it doesn't feel like a different alternative win condition where it's like, well, this team hit 200 first and the other team has still not hit their 100 AOS technology unlock gate, and now things go from like a little behind to irredeemably bad because they got some of the AOS technologies I just mentioned. Like when you get knocked out, you don't lose any of your AOS technology, or like your opponent can't pick any up. And it's like, there's like some crazy stuff out there. So it's just a matter of, insta score. That's one of them. That's just one of them. Like 50 insta score.
Yeah. So it's like a one insta score. But yeah, it is.
It's still like that's huge. That's mm-hmm. huge. So I just want to. I'm excited for it. I think it needs work to get it to a point where it can be a positive competitive experience for the players and the people at home, because that matters too. It really does. Okay. So we'll see how that all balances out. But overall, I'm excited. I'm positive about it. I think it's a perfect tempo to what we've got going on in this upcoming year. Bring it on.
Cool.
I think the best way of like kind of summarizing the whole conversation is the potential highs are so much higher. But
oh my
good
gosh.
Lord, are the lows so much lower?
Yeah. That's interesting. I am forever the optimist sometimes on this show. It feels like we're going back old school overdunk a little bit here. But
the 1v3
sometimes. But yeah, I don't know. I just think back to, I watched a lot of those like China LAN tournament noob snacks, like those matches, and not a single one of them went the way that we watched the show matches go. Like, those were, like, really exciting. They were always going to, like, 11, 12, usually. We saw continuous debuffs. We saw teams come back. And I think their way of mitigating around just, like, a landslide victory for one team via some of these Zeos technologies is, one, you get a bunch of them really early. It's, like, 0, 50, and 100. Like, those are all super easy metrics to reach, even if you're behind. Like, a couple of back caps can swing that back into, like, you're catching up with some of the tech. But the other thing is, they flood the map with objectives, which I think is a super positive decision that they've done with this game. They, even if you do have a big advantage, you have to be pretty careful about where you pick and choose to take your team fight. You have to read your opponent hard, because you could try to split push for the three different objectives that spawn at the same time, because you have Rotom spawning every single minute, and then a different main objective in the middle at like every, I don't know, whatever, 2 or 3 minutes that it ends up spawning in. There's just so many points of pushing that it's like, I mean, the team can only focus on so many things at once. I don't think that these Aeos techs will give you to the level where a Pokemon can 1v3 or 1v2 consistently all across the map. If you're losing, it's like any other MOBA now. What happens when you're losing? You gotta bulk up, play together as five, and hope you catch out one, take them out, and then make a push, right? I don't know. It feels like more of a traditional sense, and I am very excited about that. So I'm a little more optimistic. I don't think it'll be as snowball-y as maybe we're looking at it on paper. But, I mean, the show match didn't do me a lot of favors in proving that point. So I'm going to be holding on to hope. But
yeah, I mean, the last thing I'll say to that is, yeah, they're going 11, 12 minutes, but there's not 11 and 12 minutes worth of ability to explain to people at home what's happening in their face.
Oh yeah, I'm not talking about like how it is to cast. That's a bummer. Like I'm just talking about like the competitive excitement or integrity of the match. But yeah, you were right. Trying to cast this game is definitely going to be different. I think it will. We'll have to learn what KOs and what objectives are not important. You know, we'll have to be like, you know what, we can color over this one, or we have to play by play over this. It'll be an evolution for sure. It'll be challenging, but we'll get there. We'll get there. It'll be fine. Yeah, a lot of everything. There's so much going on. Calls will be happening for the first few months of casting. I guarantee that. That will be happening. But okay. Any more thoughts on 500 point mode before we move on? Perfect. Okay. Fantastic. Now, there is a whole other topic that we have to get to, but I think we're just going to kind of talk about it a little bit before we end the episode, because we have gone super long. But I think we've kind of got partial information with it, is the reason that we're only going to talk about it somewhat, but that is going to be next season, the season 2025 for Pokemon Unite. The schedule has dropped. So a few changes. The main that I'll just highlight, and then we can get into the conversation. First and foremost, Unite is now at LAIC, which I think is unbelievably hype. It will be an open bracket event, open to 32 teams who will be competing over a cash prize and some other prize that is still yet to be announced. We don't know yet, but it was not mentioned a world spot in that category. So I think it's safe to assume be nothing there. Then Unite will be returning to EUIC and NAIC. EUIC is looking like the exact same event that it was this year, with a qualifier event happening a couple of months prior that will bring some teams from across the world to compete, as well as having an open bracket. The big change here, though, is that the open bracket has been expanded to accommodate 64 teams this time. Do I think we're going to hit cap? Probably not. But it's cool that they are willing to accommodate teams if that does happen. That's really awesome. NAIC, we don't know exactly the format. It will be called the final stretch again. However, the way it is laid out in the schedule is exactly the same as EUIC, a qualifier a few months prior to the event, as well as having an open bracket open to 64 teams. So we're giving a world spot. All that is super exciting. Also, this season, because of LAIC, this season will be beginning in November. And then, of course, the last thing is championship points are now going to be awarded per team, not to player. So those are kind of the main highlights. The things that we're missing before we get into the conversation is, what do championship points mean or do now that they have been changed for team and not for players? We don't know that. And what exactly is the prizing, both monetary and world slots? We don't know anything in that regard when it comes to any tournament or championship point structure, how it's allocated by region. Nothing of that has been said yet. However, I have got word on the street says it should be very, very soon. So soon, TM, keep your mind on, or keep your ears out. But okay, I've just ranted for a little while, but I gave people all the information. So let's start talking about a little bit. Dupes next, how do you feel about the new season?
I'm excited. More Pokemon Unite is good. Cutting down on the lull between the official seasons is also good. It's something we've all clamored for a while now. I know the season starts at LAIC. I don't believe there's championship points on the line for that event. I think
We don't know that yet. It is kind of a coin flip, and a few of the paragraphs on the announcement page are a little conflicting. So it's okay, like we need the rule book. But anyway, sorry, continue.
Okay, so, I mean, either way, if it starts in November with championship points or starts in December with championship points, both is good. Mm-hmm. Those are both very good things. So I'm excited for that. It's going to be nice to be in front of the Brazilian crowd, which definitely deserves a live event of its own for how amazing they have been throughout the last couple of years. I'm excited for the change. I'm interested. I think that's the 48th time I've said that this. I'm interested to see. How the CP thing works out by team is interesting. How they're going to execute that is also going to be worth keeping an eye on.
Uh-huh.
But I think overall, if we land on a system that makes sense, it is a net positive. Because ultimately, if we want to grow this as an esport, there has to be some, because of how small the game is, there has to be some barriers to give incentive for organizations to not just pick up a team at Worlds, but pick up a team all year and get their name out there all year, because they know that the team, for the most part, that they've signed on to will be together all year. Perfect example is LG sponsoring right before the World Championships year two. They say, cool, we're going to do year three. And by the end, it's literally one player that they've signed, right? Like that they initially thought was going to be there is there. So, and that's through multiple revolutions. And that's just, it's not tenable for a company to be like, well, who am I actually backing here, right? Every time there's another revolution, it's one person less that you actually have done your research and background on, that you are willing to put your neck out for and your money out for. So that's particularly exciting in my opinion as well.
Yeah. I think you hit one of the nails on the head. You said a lot of great points, but I think the one that you really landed, Dubs, next, so credit here, is the focus on orcs. Like, so many of these changes, in my opinion, and once we get a full rule book, we'll be able to parse this out a little bit more, but it does feel like the focus from Unite is going in that direction. They want more organization investment. This has been the frontier for Pokemon on org investment, more so than any other of their titles. I mean, first to have jerseys on stage and being playing, like, they are putting orgs first and foremost, which is really interesting. No other Pokemon titles doing that. So clearly we're seeing that investment. I think that's cool. I am stoked for Unite to be at LAIC. Like you mentioned, Brazil has been one of the best fan bases at every World Championships. Wherever Baby Mazo goes, there's always a sick fan base there to cheer them on. That is awesome. At NAIC, we had one Latin America North team make it up to compete in the open bracket. That was awesome. They were a really chill team. I really liked talking to them. Dr. Mario was a lot of fun to chat with. They were chill, but it'd be awesome to see some more international representation, but I don't exactly know how visa situations look getting into Brazil from some of the other South American countries. It's safe to admit, I just don't know a lot of the visa policies out there. Very familiar with U.S. visa policy as someone who came into this country on one, but other than that, I struggle. So I'm hoping it's a moment where an open bracket will incentivize a lot of teams to come out and play, and just more so have some of those local fans get excited about the game too in a land person environment. That's gonna be awesome. Bridget, how about you? Any new season changes that you're pretty excited for? A little wary of?
Honestly, overall, super duper stoked. Mm-hmm. LAIC is so hype. I definitely looked up flights to Brazil, and then I'm like, I can't go to Brazil in okay. 2 months. That's insane.
sure.
I'm like, God, it'd be so cool. I just think the environment's going to be amazing, and I'm just kind of interested to see what they're going to do with it, because now, especially with NAIC just being final stretch, it's kind of like the LAN events are more so like you show up and you get a spot to world, so they're not really like championship point based, which I think is cool. But it'll be interesting to see obviously what they want Brazil to be, just because EUIC and NAIC kind of have their own little unique things now, which mm-hmm. I do really like, and it would be cool to see LAIC get something similar. But I feel like both those events started off just kind of being like a regional tourney, so I wouldn't be surprised if that is the starting point.
It feels like a safer rollout, right? But yeah, that's fair. Mm-hmm. But it is an open bracket, so a little bit different already that we're seeing it. So that is cool. It's open to international competition. And again, we don't have the full rule book, but parsing through the announcement that was said, which I went through with a fine-tooth comb before we got on this podcast, it did feel like last year where if teams were participating in TPC regions, aka Asian teams, it sounds like they would be open to participate in these events. They would just obviously not be eligible for any of the championship points awarded, if there are any, because their circuit does not revolve around championship points. So, Ven, how about you? I'm curious. I mean, you kind of took a break this year. You watched Worlds. Any thoughts on season 4 of Competitive Unite?
Oh, you phrased that question in a very interesting way.
That's what I do best.
So before we get to me specifically, I'll talk about the format more generally.
Okay.
I think overall it's a net positive. If the rest of the rulebook is sensible, which is a big if.
Of course.
I think that my ideal world would be no championship points for LAN events, because just to keep things fair and the most competitive environment possible.
Of course.
And then like it's fairly reasonable to assume that championship points will probably be used for spots in some places. All right, cool. The big one for me, I think, that will help Competitive Unite like viewership and especially like casters is the previous system technically incentivized backstabbing a fair amount.
Yes, it did. You're right.
like you can hate some individual players for doing it. Like, I know there were a lot of people upset, especially with like the Lutano GT thing last year, mm-hmm. but like Lutano was doing what was best for him. That was what the system incentivized.
Sure.
I think it's a net positive that people are going to be more incentivized to stick with their current teams. It lets you build narratives better. Mm-hmm. Again, assuming it's all like well constructed. And I think all in all, it will lean to both a better experience for orgs, which little bit of hopium here. I remember in the pre-Luminosity days, while we were talking to several bigger organizations than Luminosity, mm-hmm. they were right on the fucking fence. And they were like, just a little bit more comp support, just a little bit more assurance, and they would have been there.
Hmm. Cool.
Okay. One thing I want to note, a random change from year one to this year, which I just thought about, Ven, after what you were saying, there was Red Bull on jerseys this year, and that was a true. Big no-no.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
We had the JCB, the Japanese Commerce Bank or something, was on Fennel's jerseys. I mean, they kind of like...
Yeah, I only saw Tapel for a couple things. Like, for the most part, it was...
Red Bull was not one of them, because I distinctly in my mind was like, huh, All right.
Can we put it on? Can we put it on our casting desks like every other esport now? Do we get the lame?
I'm gonna be honest. I was surprised they even like. I think they like. I don't remember. I was surprised they even approved Black Andrew the year one. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I was pretty shocked as well.
But yeah, like that is a huge thing. Like there, it's so much more org friendly, and like the actual competitive structure seems like it might be more friendly to players as well, and it might incentivize people to learn social skills, which is always a plus.
Depends on who you ask. But yeah, you are
conflict resolution. Learn it, people.
That's true. Yeah. So let's. I think we're obviously all really excited about the majority of the changes. The one I have been pretty trepidatious on for a long time has been the championship points being allocated to teams. My biggest concern is just who actually holds those points, you know? Like, when it comes down to it, do you have to play as the entire roster of five? Can you make no change? How does that happen? A couple things this format will do incredibly well, though, if it works how I think it will. Subs work now, which is awesome. Substitutes are a real thing. Because, let's face it, I don't think that Kyrios and Jungle Book, I don't think that situation, I didn't want them to do that, but, like, I think we can all look at that situation and see why they, like, you know, had an account sharing moment. Yeah, they shared an account sharing moment.
Like, that's the thing. If
you see
the
why
Jungle...
they did that.
Yes.
Yeah, no, but like if they're on the team and Jungle Book's the official sub and the points stay within the team, right, then it's like so clear and easy.
Exactly. We check that box, right? Yeah, so that is one of the, that would be like the best thing to come out of this. Now, what players are going to be signing up just as a sub for the whole season? I don't know, but if you find one, awesome. Hold on to them tightly because, well, someone's got to go to prom or something. You need players to play.
Sure,
so that's
right.
That's really what it comes down to. That's what it comes down to. But yeah, Ven, were you going to mention something there? Probably not. All right, let's...
I don't think I'm legally allowed to.
Yeah. Let's not get you indicted here on the podcast. Welcome back, Ella. Okay, awesome. Well, next week we'll probably be talking about this a little bit more. We just went really long. I didn't want to go too much in-depth the new changes outside of... LAS, she's going to be so sick. I really hope that I'm going to be there because Brazil crowd going to be the best thing of all time.
So good.
Gosh, yeah, I just hope the open bracket fills up. 64 teams, very ambitious, but if it fills up, that is sick.
320 people.
That'd be awesome.
Easy.
That'd be awesome. hey. Be so cool. And then Worlds in Anaheim, we'll talk about all that other stuff later.
Yeah.
There was also a patch. We'll talk about all that stuff later. We got a lot to talk about on next week's episode.
Who cares? Greninja is Leafeon now.
Let's go. Oh, hey. You said that as a bad thing, but I read it as a positive.
Hey, okay. Zoinks hard carried me on Gren the other day. It was awesome.
That's right. Talk to him, Bridget. Tell him. Okay. let's close out the episode. Zoo round of plugs. Ven, it was awesome to have you back around again on the podcast. We'll definitely have to be doing this more, but Ven, anything to plug before we get out of here?
Yeah, okay. So I'm going to answer the way you had originally asked me a question earlier.
All right.
my opinion on Competitive Unite, how it stands for me, I will not be doing anything with the team this year.
Cool.
Probably there's some stipulations there that I'll talk on a later episode where we're not pressed for time.
Great.
But I was like, when I wasn't in Bridget's chat, I was on the TTM verse like unofficial co-stream. So there is actually VODs of me flaming people. I know people really loved that last year. And generally speaking, I'll be doing more stuff with TTM, which is a queer safe community within Unites, one that will not post straight pride flags during the month of June. That is a direct shot at someone. If you know, you know. but yeah, other than that, I have a new Twitter account now. I'm not going to advertise it, but if you know, you know.
Great. All right. Hell yeah. Dupsex, anything to sell out or shout out?
If you know, you know. Follow @BigBridget on Twitter. Let's get it. Also, Zoinks. Get ready to get a picture of me and Bridget having a beer on Friday.
I hate you guys. I'm flying to wherever you live. I'm flying to wherever you live. It's over. It's over. I'm coming.
I almost said pull up.
You can't tell me no. I'll sleep in a ditch. Okay, Bridget, anything to plug?
Honestly, no, but you should check out Zoinks on. It's super effective podcast, and I forget the name of the
Tweet
Smash
Talks.
One.
Tweet Talks.
Yeah, that you. It was, I watched it on YouTube, but he did a great job, and they were really fun to listen to. Highly recommend.
So yeah. If you're interested in Super Smash Brothers, I can't recommend Tweet Talks enough. It's the best Super Smash podcast out there. Lights Out is also very good, but Tweet Talks is the best one in the business for sure. They cover every major. Tweak is on that podcast, and he's one of the best players in the entire world. If you're asking me, the best player. So, go check out that episode. We talk a lot about how there's a lot of similarities between competitive Smash Brothers and competitive Unite, specifically in the competitive communities, which I actually find really interesting. That was a really fun discussion. So check that out. And then on It's Super Effective, we just talk all about 500 point mode. So if you want to go hear about that, that is also the spot to do it. The only other plug I think we have for Unite Mics is obviously keep checking out all the episodes on youtube.com/Unite Mics or on Spotify or any other podcast platform you want to listen to. But watch out in October. Unite Mics is planning on running back our 16-hour charity stream marathon event. We're almost exactly settled on a date. I think it is like officially settled, but we don't know the charity or anything yet. So like, keep an eye out for a big announcement coming up soon. But we're hoping to do a marathon stream that will, of course, include a tournament with all proceeds going to charity. Last time it was literally so much fun. We had a blast. We had people from other game communities, casters from around the Unite space as well. Like, we did Jeopardy, we played games. It was so much fun. So look forward to that. We'll be talking about it probably every single week on the podcast up until then. So keep an eye out for that. But I think that will finally bring us to the conclusion of our post-Worlds episode. A lot to talk about, but I think we crushed it. Also, Liquidation is somewhat better. Please don't play it in my games. All right, I think that'll bring us to the end of the episode. We will talk to you all next time. Until then, bye-bye.